A U.S. policy goal is under threat in Guatemala. It's designed to keep Central Americans off the migrant trail through Mexico to America. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. This Central American policy goal is strengthening institutions like government, the courts, and police. The idea is to help countries function better so that people won't want to leave home looking for a better life in the U.S. But in Guatemala, that goal is now in jeopardy. A UN-led commission is prosecuting corruption that's crippled the economy for the vast majority of Guatemalans for generations. Today, that country's economy depends on international loans and investment. But that money is tied to progress against corruption, which Guatemala's president is trying to defuse. This story comes from Lorne Madelon in Guatemala City.
They're layering the last bricks on a hospital annex, a project financed by international lenders. If you see a clinic, a school, or a road being built here, it's likely that foreign funding's the catalyst. But these days, the echo of construction's being drowned out by protests. Demonstrators are angry at their president, former TV comedian Jimmy Morales. They say he's hindering the fight against corruption. His campaign mantra was neither corrupt nor a thief. With no political experience, Morales won in 2015 by leveraging disdain for the previous president, Otto Perez Molina. He was jailed after UN prosecutors charged him in a massive corruption case involving millions of dollars in bribes. The international organization's been in Guatemala since 2007 and is lending investigative expertise and staff to the reform efforts. Fast forward to this past August. Those same prosecutors announce a probe of President Morales' campaign finances. And 2 days later, he responds.
De declarar persona non grata al señor Iván Velázquez Gómez.
He declared the UN's lead prosecutor in Guatemala, a Colombian named Iván Velázquez, persona non grata, that he had to leave the country. That started a spiral of growing protests. The expulsion order was blocked by the courts. The U.S., 8 other nations, and the European Union expressed disdain for the attempt to stymie Velázquez's work. Polls show that people have deep support for the work of prosecutor Velázquez. Guatemalan Congressman Fernando Linares, an ally of President Morales, isn't one of them.
We say that he has been doing selective persecution. He has not been objective or impartial.
The Guatemalan street does not appear to be buying that claim. Multiple politicians, lawyers, and bankers are or have been targets of investigations. They're congressmen who don't represent us, screams a protester. Words like that make international investors skittish. Guatemala receives loans from Canada and the U.S. governments, and from the World Bank and the Inter-American Development Bank. All are entities that tie their loans to progress against corruption. In an email, Central Bank President Sergio Resino stated those loans are secure for now, but added further investment could be put on hold if tensions continue.
So this is not just a political story, it's an economic story also.
That's Julio Prado, one of the prosecutors who investigated the now-jailed previous president, Perez Molina. Prado's emphatic. Even if large-scale protests scare off international investors, it's a price Guatemala should pay for longer-term benefit.
Finally, the people has the courage to get out to the streets and says, we want a better country, we want hope, we want a better political system.
Guatemalans in the U.S. send home close to $6 billion a year in remittances. That's 10% of Guatemala's GDP. These days, they're helping their country in a different way, says Gabriel Ware in Guatemala City.
Many Guatemalan communities in the United States, in Canada, are supporting what's happening here.
Ware's with the civil society group Justicia Ya, Justice Now.
Telling people here in Guatemala, their families and communities, what's going on, because many of them come from remote places in Guatemala that don't have access to information.
Recently, current and former presidents in Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, and Peru have been targets of corruption allegations. Those investigations have been led by local prosecutors in those countries using the commission's tactics in Guatemala, specifically researching heavily documented paper trails. Members of both major U.S. political parties have asked the State Department to at least temporarily deny U.S. foreign assistance funding to the Guatemalan government, money that can't legally be released until the U.S. certifies progress against corruption. I'm Lorne Madelon in Guatemala City.
The lawsuit against the Sanctuary Cities ban known as SB4 is back in court this coming week. Plaintiff attorneys for the city of San Antonio and Bexar County, who have sued the state, previewed the arguments Tuesday. Texas Public Radio's Ryan Poppy reports they'll make their case before the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court in New Orleans.
The hearing before a three-judge panel at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals will consider whether or not a panel of U.S. District Judges in San Antonio was correct in its decision to place key components of SB4 on hold while the case makes its way through the federal court system. The Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, or MALDEF's Nina Perales, the attorney representing the city of San Antonio, Bexar County, and the city of El Paso, says
those legal claims include a First Amendment claim involving free speech and the fact that SB4 prohibits public actors, employees, elected officials from speaking out against SB4.
Currently, the San Antonio Police Department is able to advise its officers on how and when to ask about someone's immigration status. But if the Fifth Circuit rules against the lower court's temporary injunction, those city officials could be fined and lose their jobs. Federal judges in New Orleans will hear oral arguments concerning the original temporary injunction of the law on November 7th. Ryan Poppy, Texas Public Radio News.
Houston finally has something to celebrate in the weeks since Hurricane Harvey. The Astros won the World Series for the first time. But not everyone is finding it easy to smile. In the storm-plagued city, an estimated 1 in 10 students is a dreamer. That adds up to 20,000 students. Houston Public Media's Laura Eisensee has the story of one teenager whose dream got deferred following two incidents, Hurricane Harvey and President Trump's decision to phase out DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program.
When Maritza and her little brother get home from school, they grab a snack and chat with their mom. The after-school routine is one of the few things that still feels normal since Harvey flooded their East Houston home 2 months ago. Maritza shows me the living room.
Before we had the hurricane, we had a couch by the wall. We had another couch over here.
Now it's empty, except for a quinceañera portrait of Maritza in a red ball gown hanging on the wall. She says they threw out a lot of moldy furniture and soggy carpet.
I was just so frustrated seeing my house like that. Yeah, it was really hard. And my mom, she's really positive, but I know that she felt like she wanted to give us more.
Something else was weighing on her. Maritza is undocumented. We're using her middle name to protect her identity. She's one of the so-called dreamers and had planned to apply for DACA when she started her senior year at FIR. But just a few days after Harvey, Maritza and her mom took a break from cleaning and turned on the TV. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions was giving a live speech on immigration.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
I wanted to cry, but I didn't.
She listened as Sessions justified the new, tougher stance.
There's nothing compassionate about the failure to enforce immigration laws.
Maritza was stunned. For months, her family had saved about $1,000 to pay the DACA application fee and a lawyer. The only thing she needed were some school records. But her school was shut down for 2 weeks due to Harvey, right when the government cut off new applications.
I feel like bad thing after bad thing after bad thing.
Maritza's mom told her not to give up.
She said, you know, things happen for a reason. And just because he took it out doesn't mean that you can't go to school. Like, we will figure it out like we always do.
Maritza's a good student. In fact, she's near the top of her class. And Texas does allow undocumented students to enroll in public colleges and pay in-state tuition. But without DACA, she has fewer ways to pay for college, like scholarships. And even if she earns her degree, there's no guarantee she can get a job down the road.
It's not a unique situation, unfortunately, especially here in Houston with Harvey.
Jill Campbell is an attorney at Baker Ripley, a social services agency.
When we knew that DACA was going to be canceled because the administration was kind of hinting at it, the rest of the country got to rush last-minute applications out the door. And we, unfortunately, were underwater and couldn't do that.
Superintendent Richard Carranza estimates that in the Houston School District, 1 in 10 students, about 20,000 total, are dreamers.
We cannot lose you, and we will not abandon you. I believe in finding a solution where these dreamers can keep reaching their dreams in the United States of America, a nation of immigrants.
Congress has 6 months to replace DACA, but Maritza's not counting on it. She realizes that, like Hurricane Harvey, the situation is in some ways out of her control. All she can do is try to stay positive.
Si sigues pensando negativo, cosas negativas te van a pasar. If you keep thinking negative, negative things are going to happen to you.
In Houston, I'm Laura Eisensee.
Coming up next on Fronteras, why the work of an American artist is on display at a museum in Tijuana for the first time in 15 years.
The paintings have less to do with politics specifically, but more to do with humanity and the challenges we all face as human beings.
We'll explore that story and hear from Conjunto Queen Eva Ibarra when we come back. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. The Centro Cultural de Tijuana recently opened its first exhibition of an American artist in more than a decade, part of an effort to stimulate more cross-border cultural exchange in a turbulent time for U.S.-Mexico relations. The exhibit features 23 paintings by San Diego-based artist Mark Bryce. It coincides with the museum's celebration of its 35th anniversary. Andrew Bowen of KPBS was there as the artwork went up.
Staff at the Centro Cultural de Tijuana, or CECUT, are mounting 23 paintings by San Diego-based artist Mark Bryce.
So I guess they're going to put the signage here.
I'm perusing the paintings with Bryce in the exhibition area just outside the museum's theater. One in particular catches my eye. It's called The Flame.
It's rather symbolic of where perhaps we are in America, you know.
The painting shows a tall Uncle Sam hat sitting on a blue box. There's a single candle in the foreground, casting a dim light on the hat's stars and stripes. The scene is dark, but hopeful.
There's a flame in the American people, and there's that spirit. So we want to keep that alive. And it means different things to different people, but we have to respect all different people's flame and in the spirit of being American. Being American is great, but we have to do the right thing, right?
A lot of Bryce's work features American iconography, flags, American landscapes. One painting has a small copy of George Washington crossing the Delaware. Bryce says that's a reflection of who he is. He was literally born on the 4th of July. Some of his works do take a critical look at the United States, but they're not preachy.
The paintings have less to do with politics specifically, but more to do with humanity and the challenges we all face as human beings. Love, war.
And that's the title of the exhibition, Love and War, two themes that are about as universal as they come. Alan Bautista, deputy director of CECUT, says that's precisely why the museum approached Bryce to feature his art.
His work is very universal and has a very universal language. So I think that will appeal a lot to the public here, and they'll understand, you know, what he's trying to tell us through his work, and because it's not so different from what people here, you know, want or pursue.
Bautista says art crossing the border is nothing new.
CECUT has always been kind of a bridge with the Mexican culture and the American culture. We do a lot of work with museums in Balboa Park, for example, with Mingay Museum and also the San Diego Contemporary Art Museum. So we do a lot of shows in San Diego, a lot of events there. But now we're trying to make it the other way around.
neither Bautista nor Bryce was interested in talking directly about Donald Trump. Still, I'm thinking about a Mexican audience living right here on the border, watching and waiting for that wall to come up. I can't imagine them seeing these very American paintings and not thinking of the U.S. president and his rhetoric about Mexican immigrants being rapists and killers. I ask Bryce what he would say to those visitors.
Let's keep talking. Let's be friends. Americans are very separate from their government. And you can love your country and be American, but you don't have to agree with what your government's doing. And I think it's true for Mexican people, too.
You can see Bryce's paintings at Secut, just south of the border, through February 18th.
Andrew Bowen of KPBS brought us that story. That's Conjunto legend Eva Ibarra. Ibarra is a San Antonio native hailing from the city's west side. She's one of the few women accordionists in the world performing Conjunto music professionally. Conjunto is that accordion-heavy blend of Mexican, Czech, and German polka-style music popular along the U.S.-Mexico border. Ibarra has been playing accordion since age 4, and being one of 9 children in a musical family, you'd think her choice of instrument would have been encouraged.
And my mom never wanted me to be nobody. So I told my mom, I want to be somebody, Mom. I belong to the people. No, but you're going to play for me here, just for us. I don't want you out there in danger. You're going to be in danger. You're a little girl, and no. You know, and then I grew up, and I told Mom, I'm a big girl now. I'm short, but I'm a big girl.
The Ibarra household would receive phone calls asking for Eva to play gigs in Michigan and Puerto Rico, but Mom disapproved.
She said, she's not going to go. Click. So, and I cried. And I feel inside of me that I belong to the people.
Did your mother ever come to accept your success?
Yes and no. But my dad, yes. Not my mom. My mom said, you're gonna play the piano. And I'm going to take you for piano lessons. And she did. She bought me a good piano. And I learned. But my dad got me secretly and he said, Eva, listen to me. Your key is the accordion. Stick with it.
And stick with it she did. Ibarra is renowned for her virtuosity and is often mentioned in the same breath as another San Antonio Conjunto legend, Flaco Jimenez. One music critic said Eva's approach to the accordion can be compared to Miles Davis. Eva has expanded to teaching accordion, not just locally, but in other cities across the U.S. But San Antonio always draws her back.
Sometimes I go like New York, Washington, and Seattle, Washington. I stood there for 1 year, and I was teaching there, and I was feeling good, but I was missing my San Antonio, Texas, and my, comida, my food, and it's not the same. My frijol is my pinto beans, whatever, but it's not the same over there in Seattle 1 year.
That's what I
love it over
I'm
there.
From Florida.
Sandy Rodriguez is Eva's vocalist and manager.
And when I was in Florida, I would send her tortillas. I would see her performing, and I'm like, man, you got to have lots of carbs, to work all the way she does it. So I'm like, hey, how better than a tortilla?
Sandy has been singing with Eva since 2016. She says Eva has predictive musical instincts that blow her away.
She doesn't like me to say, but under her voice, you can't mess up. And I don't know how she does it, how she knows I'm fixing to hit a bad note here, and she just sings louder. But it's just the gift that she has. And she guides me in lots of things. As like a life coach also, a step-in mom. Overall, just I couldn't ask for anything better.
This September, Eva Ibarra received the highest honor she and any other folk musician could ever receive, the National Endowment for the Arts National Heritage Fellowship. The award entailed a $25,000 cash prize and a chance to play in Washington, D.C. at George Washington University.
I'd like to introduce you to 2017 National Heritage Fellow Eva Ibarra of San Antonio, Texas, with her conjunto group, Siempre!
When Eva got the call that she was getting the award, she thought it was a prank.
Yeah. She's been let down so many times, and she's like, nah, I don't believe you until I see it. Well, we've been there, done that, came back. She still don't believe it. But she was like, here's somebody, I don't know what they're talking about. And I got the phone, and she told me, and I was like, Eva, you won the NEA. She's like, yeah, right. And I'm like, I'm being serious. Next person calls, I'm like, Eva, I think this might be a little bit for real, because she's so humble and noble and todo. She sees the videos, and she says, no. I'm like, no, what? I didn't win the NEA. Yeah, you did. But she still says it's a dream.
That's
because
a dream.
She wanted it so for so long.
And for me, you know, the highest honor, but for me it's the same, from the lowest awards to the highest.
Whether Eva is playing a backyard barbecue, a prestigious event in the nation's capital, or in a radio studio, expect Eva Ibarra to give it her all. And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced the broadcast, and Michelle Dubach is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.